Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're back this week. Brian has joined us, and now, for the first time, Brian, Ben, and I are all on our fancy new microphones. I can only imagine what a pleasant and delightful experience this is for all of our listeners. You know, just to hear all of my ums and uhs and just crystal clear quality, you know, hearing Ben's jewel just jump through your earbuds, you know, hearing Brian fall asleep and forget to join the conversation with just unparalleled clarity. It's got to be great. Are you excited about this, Brian?
By the way, guys, this podcast is brought to you by Blue Yeti. If you have a podcast and you want everybody to hear your dumb opinions about socialism, you should buy one, and it'll be crystal clear.
Oh boy. Ben, are you excited about this new era in Wheelie Dealer Radio history?
Not really. I'll be honest. It really tethers me to one space so I can't sit outside with the crickets and pee in the bushes if I have to, and all the stuff that, you know, me and our listeners have grown used to over the years. Now it's just the quiet sounds of an empty bedroom.
But as a socialist, it must feel, you know, almost like coming home to have a microphone for your podcast now.
That's right.
With the jewel pod in your other hand.
They used to hand out jewels and podcast mics with every DSA membership, but funds have gotten tight, and now we have to fend for ourselves. So much for socialism.
Well, I'm excited to hear you guys so clearly, even if I, you know, get to understand what the inner mechanics of a jewel pod sounds like now. But beyond jewel pods and microphones, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. In exciting news, Tottenham have made some very interesting signings that weren't even a glimmer in our eye last week when we recorded this podcast. So we have that to talk about. But unfortunately, we have a game that Tottenham Hotspur played in to talk about first. So let's get through that. Tottenham played Southampton in an FA Cup fixture. Score finished 1-1. It was very annoying because we're going to have to, you know, play them again, something Jurgen Klopp just couldn't bear to do. I think this is kind of an interesting game. It was very frustrating how it ended, but I would say that first half was one of the more encouraging halves of football under Jose Mourinho. I think we dominated Southampton. I think we looked really dangerous in attack. I think, you know, we are clearly crying out for some sort of a finisher in that, because Son and Dele really couldn't put the ball, you know, they couldn't, you know, throw the ball in the ocean during that match. But I just think the way we dominated play,
terrible metaphor.
Yeah, leave me alone. I've been talking for a few minutes. You know, I just think we looked really positive, really dominant, and I think a lot of that has to do with our newly permanently signed midfielder Lo Celso, and that I think we're trusting him more and more, and we're starting to see the dividends of that. Ben, I mean, how did you feel about this game? Did the first half, was it encouraging to you, or was it all just sort of fine and what you're accustomed to seeing under Mourinho?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't blown away by any means. I mean, I thought we looked good. I thought Lo Celso...
I should be clear. This is all about lowered expectations at this point, but compared to what we've seen, I was a little bit blown away.
Yeah, I mean, it's the second match in a row that we've gotten to see Lo Celso really take the reins of the game. And, you know, he was very good. But, you know, we didn't really get good until Jedson came off, who was, I thought, completely anonymous. And Lo Celso got to move into the center of the pitch and, like, really start running the show. And I don't think it was an accident that we scored, like, immediately after that change was made. But yeah, his son looked very bad at shooting, very bad at progressing the ball and beating a man. I mean, we just, our attack just is crying out for something different. You know, Lucas Moura continues to not be a striker. Sun and Dele have picked really terrible timing to go a little cold in front of goal. You know, so it was fine. You know, we had eight shots all match. Like, that's fine. That's not anything to write home about. But yeah, there were positives. Tanganga played left back and he was pretty good.
He's been a real find just in terms of saving our asses this season. I mean, just he gives us so much more flexibility than we had before he came into the team.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown now competent performances at three different positions across the back line, which I don't think anybody expected, you know, even if we thought we could get anything out of him. I think that's definitely been a nice little bonus. You know, to the point where now we're getting rid of fullbacks, which I guess we can talk about later, but he seems to have convinced Jose that he is worth at least a backup role in this team, so that's cool.
Brian, I'm going to guess you had nothing encouraging to take out of this match for how we discussed it before the podcast started.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk about this game at all. Lo Celso was good. That was he made that one little pass, lofted over the top. Like, that was really nice. Everything else about it, I thought was, it was fine. I don't think it bears talking about much more, especially when we have transfers to talk about, and transfers are my favorite thing.
They're the real reason to follow a football team, not actually watching the game.
I guess there's one thing we do need to talk about, only because we were so grossly negligent last week. Eagle the Reese.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that last time out. Sorry.
Well, it's good. Ben, it's not like we talk about Tottenham every single week. Come on.
Who can remember these things? There's 11 guys on the pitch to keep track of. I mean, that's excessive. Yeah, so, yeah, Hugo's back.
End. I think Hugo's been, like, fine, if unspectacular.
He's been good. He's been noticeably better than Gazzaniga.
I think is funny is he didn't... I think it was a penalty? It was one of the goals that was scored against him. I honestly can't remember which match, and I feel like Gazzaniga would have saved it just by virtue of he is taller. But that's about the only thing criticism I could level at Lloris.
Yeah, Hugo never saves penalties. What do you want?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, he looks really good. It's nice to have him back. He doesn't look as tentative.
That's definitely not true. Didn't he save one in the Champions League last year?
He did. He saved one against Arsenal, too. So.
Okay, just checking. Just making sure.
Wasn't the Arsenal one in the 90th minute or something, too?
Accuracy is very important on this show.
All right, well, name a third penalty he saved. That's what I thought.
It's nice He's having really him back. Gomez. I think it is noteworthy how much better he controls his area than Gazzaniga does, and whether I don't know if that's directing traffic or just how assured it feels when he comes for the ball. It's just, I don't know. I feel much more confident when he's out there than I do.
All right, you know what? Nobody cares about this. We don't even care about this. Our listeners can tell that nobody cares about
this. Is it transfer time? It's transfer time. Let's start with the sort of fait accompli of the transfer window, which was Lo Celso got... Well, I guess it wasn't, but Lo Celso got permanently signed. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this other than I think we were all worried we'd fuck it up, but I think we were probably always going to do this, and certainly after his performance in the last month, I think this was a complete no-brainer. I mean, we're saving ourselves like £6-7 million by doing it now as opposed to later. I'm just glad that this didn't get super fucked up. I don't know if there's anything else to say about it.
Well, I think the notable thing about it is he signs a 5.5-year deal.
That is nice. I mean,
that basically locks him up for, you know, the rest of these pre-peak years and into like those peak years. He'll be here at Spurs. We'll have plenty of opportunities to sign him to extensions. Like, the 5.5-year deal is great. Like, I mean, it really just means that he's part of the long-term project, whatever that may be. And I think based on the performances he put in the last month, that's exactly what you'd want from him. So I think the 5.5-year deal is the most notable part of it. And yeah, we saved a little money by doing it now. So
Ndombele is on a similar length deal, isn't he?
Yes. He is also on a 5-year deal. He's a year younger than Lo Celso. So we have Lo Celso locked up till he's 29 and Ndombele locked up, I think, till he's 27, 28. So, that's good. We've got the best years of both of these guys' career, probably at pretty good wages. So,
and now if we can just figure out, you know, someone else to play in the midfield three with them, that would be
well,
be great.
That's probably not going to happen until the summer, but it's not going to be, see the smooth transition right here? It's not going to be Christian Eriksen, who we sold to Inter Milan for about something around 20 million euros, because accuracy, as Brian said, is very important on this podcast. I think, first of all, it is borderline incredible we got any amount of money for him, considering he was about to leave on a free. But I think there's a lot to talk about with Christian Eriksen. First, let's start in the immediacy. Are we going to miss him at all?
I mean, as a team, no. I mean, I think Lo Celso was specifically signed to be his replacement. Whether that is directly in the same position that Eriksen played, or just, you know, doing creative things from deeper. You know, I think we were very much legislating for Eriksen's departure. He clearly hasn't given us that much this season. There's been a few good performances in the midst of all of his very anonymous, lackluster performances. But I think as a squad, as a team, as a club, it's time to move on, and I don't think we're going to suffer as a result. Am I going to miss Christian Eriksen, who was one of the best players I've ever seen at Spurs, who was a key part of the 5 years of Pochettino and all the good things that happened? Like, yeah, absolutely. I will definitely miss him. He was wonderful to watch at his best, and, you know, he gave so much to us. You know, he barely missed any matches over the course of that period. He was such a mainstay in the side. I hate that it ended this way.
It honestly struck me, like, I'd gotten so used to hating him because how bad he's been this year, and just not just bad, but just how much it looked like he didn't give a shit anymore. And I kind of forgotten how great he was. And I know that sounds kind of stupid, but, like, you know, you're watching the highlights, like, especially that goal against Madrid. But, you know, you just watch some of the highlights of him here, and it really is just, like, he really was. I think he was probably the best player under Pochettino. Or of that Pochettino Spurs team, I think he was probably the best player on that team. And I know Harry Kane could give him a run for that money, but he was just incredible. And it's sad, like you said, Ben, that it ended that way. Like, I mean, it's really weird to think there's, like, an alternate reality where we win the Champions League and he rides off in the sunset with Pochettino, and none of us are really that mad about it because we won the Champions League. But instead, we lost that game. Zidane put his foot down at Madrid. We didn't sell him to Madrid. I mean, there's a world in which Zidane doesn't fuck that up for us, where we sell him then and we maybe go get Bruno Fernandes, which seems to be what, you know, was going to happen. I'm a little skeptical of how good Fernandes is, but it's just a shame that, it, like you said, and even putting aside any benefit to Spurs or how much money we got for him, I mean, he was one of the best players that's ever played for Tottenham Hotspur, and that he left on bad terms is really sad. And, you know, I think this is probably going to be easily forgotten. You know, it still sucks.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen guys like Berbatov and Keane and Bale and Modric all leave pretty acrimoniously. You know, it wasn't ever dragged out to this degree with this kind of level of bad performances and unprofessional. But everybody hated those guys when they left. I mean, knives were out. People, you know, I don't know if they were burning jerseys, but it was generally the attitude. And, you know, time has certainly seemed to heal a lot of wounds with respect to those guys. And everybody now kind of remembers them pretty fondly. So I certainly expect that in a few years, you know, we'll start treating Eriksen with the love and respect he deserves.
I don't think it'll take years.
I get pissed off now.
I don't think it'll take years, although I do think I thought there was something deeply funny about him not being able to beat the first man in his first play for Inter today. It's just, I think Spurs fans will get over it fairly quickly. The fact of the matter is, though, you know, like, Berbatov, I mean, think about how Berbatov left. Like, I mean, that was ugly. And this, I don't think this was nearly that ugly.
Yeah, I mean, Berbatov, like, went on strike in August, before the transfer window closed, back when the transfer window closed, you know, after the season started. And yeah, it was shitty. It was very shitty. People were very upset. But it was short, and then, you know, we got Fraser Campbell in return. So, I mean, how mad could we stay?
And I think the other thing about those transfers is Bale, Modric, Berbatov, they were all taking like steps up, like things that they were moving to clubs that were obviously bigger, obviously better, getting huge pay rises. And so the move to Inter, I guess, for Eriksen feels weird. I feel like if this had come after last season, in the summer, where we'd have gotten a, you know, a 50, 60, 70 million pound fee, and he'd have gone to Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, some of the other big clubs that were rumored to be interested in him, and he didn't also have this period where he just basically sucked, this would be a lot easier to swallow, and you, there wouldn't be some of the acrimony that we're seeing. But the move to Inter just feels weird. It feels like a lateral move, or maybe a move down. And I don't know. I think that's the weird part of it to me.
Well, I think, I mean, there were a lot of people I saw on Twitter being like, oh, well, for all the like drama about Eriksen this year, like he got his big move, he got his big money. I mean, he's making a lot of money at Inter. But I would argue, like, you know, the way he played this year did have an effect. Like, there's a reason he's at Inter Milan and not, like you said, Real Madrid. I don't know, Atletico or one of those teams. I mean, there's a reason that's where he ended up, is because, you know, he hasn't looked good this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good for him. He went to Inter, he got paid. It sounds like he like nearly tripled his salary, so I get it. I get moving, even if it is sideways or even a step backwards. But, you know, it's frustrating for him, I got to say, because, you know, he's not... It's not like he's not good enough to play for those big teams. It's just Zidane came back to Madrid and decided he didn't want him, and that was sort of the end of it.
It's just, there is a bit of weirdness to me that no team made a really big push for him. You know, earlier.
There aren't that many teams that much bigger than us.
Yeah, know? I guess what I mean is, like, I would have thought Real Madrid or Barca. I mean, there was a report today that Levy had an asking price of like 130 million euros, but I think that was in England. So clearly that is a price just designed to get people to go away. I mean, I'm just shocked that Madrid or Barcelona didn't test our resolve a few years earlier, because there was never any serious rumors about Eriksen leaving until like last year.
Yeah, because he was a dedicated professional who loved the club and loved Pochettino's project and was all in. And you thankless Spurs fans don't appreciate that. Yeah, no, I have no idea. I mean, you know, like Barcelona went for Coutinho, and I don't know what the hell Real Madrid is ever doing.
We always said that...
Someone should have gone for Eriksen.
Eriksen never felt like a star. I mean, this, honestly, his Inter unveiling is probably like the biggest deal he's ever felt, just in the way they promoted him, because he's always just been a very workmanlike guy at Spurs.
Seems like a weirdo who doesn't know how to like talk to human beings. Like, yeah,
he's a Time Lord. We've established that on this podcast.
Yeah, he's a weird alien who's still figuring out what it means to be a human, and it shows. And yeah, it's hard to, you know, make a whole marketing strategy around a guy like that.
I mean,
but
look, we sold it for a profit and got a promising Dutch wonder kid just to replace him on the roster, if not in position. You know, it's just like we all would have thought a couple of years ago, exactly what we would have expected. But when you look back at Eriksen, like how do you, Brian, we'll start with you, but how do you remember Eriksen? Sort of like, what do you think of? You know, I mean, are you still, is it just him sucking and not beating the first man? Has the season embittered you to that point? Or do you, is there something else that really comes to mind when you think of Christian Eriksen?
No, I think like Ben said, I think he's probably, in the last decade, I think he's probably the most important Tottenham Hotspur player, you know, that's not named Harry Kane. I think the way that Eriksen played for Pochettino, was integral to the style that he wanted to play and the stuff that we wanted to do on the football pitch. Like, you know, the fact that he was a willing presser and the fact that he was able to, you know, pick a pass or recycle possession or score from a free kick. Like, he did so many things that just knitted the team together. And, you know, when we didn't have a passer in midfield, he dropped deep and got the team moving forward. And so, like, I have, like, pretty much, you know, all positive memories of Eriksen. Like, I you know, like, look, like, this season has sucked, Christian Eriksen aside, so it's not like, and it's not like everybody else has been playing stellar and then he's been the one, you know, negative light, so I can put that in a box. Like, his behavior or, you know, his performances this season can go to the side. And, you know, he contributed so much to that Champions League run, to teams that finished second, third, second. Like, I just, you know, like I said, the most important player not named Harry Kane for Spurs in the last decade. And I think the things I'm going to think, like, that goal against Inter Milan, I think that's the Christian Eriksen moment that I'm going to always remember. And then, you know, he gave us so many of the important moments or exciting moments for Spurs in the last, like, 6 years. It's to hate him now just because of a few months of kind of a temper tantrum would be stupid.
Yeah. I think for me, the Eriksen moments that always stick in my mind are those twin assists to Dele against Chelsea. I don't know. No, I don't have anything interesting to say about them. They were very good.
I mean, I think the highest compliment...
In the one at Stamford Bridge where we finally beat Chelsea, yep, at Stamford Bridge. Like, he scored some good and important goals, and, like, he made some amazing passes, and, like, we can complain about his corner kicks, but, like, some of them worked sometimes. Like, we scored some goals from corner kicks. Like, I don't know.
No, I mean, there was... In The Athletic, they wrote about... They're trying this sort of, like, these flat passes across the face of goal. And when it didn't work, he didn't beat the first man. But when it did work, it was like all those goals that, like, Toby was scoring, you know, when he first got here. Like, that was a result of that strategy. The thing about Eric...
If you actually catch a teammate at that front post, it's an easy header to glance in past the goalkeeper. And, yeah, you know, I think part of it is that, like, the early years of Eriksen, he was assisting a lot more from set pieces. He was scoring direct from set pieces, and
even did it this year. He's still good at set pieces when you know, I guess I don't want to say when he wanted to be, but
yeah, I just think, like, the volume tailed off, so the criticism, you know, became much more pronounced.
Well, I think I saw this stat in our writers' room, but, like, hasn't he scored more goals from set pieces than any other player in the Premier League, like, since he came into the Premier League?
I wouldn't be shocked.
Yep, that's a real stat. But I think a lot of those, I think if you look at the distribution of when those goals happened, you know, there are not as many of them more recent. And so they fade out of people's memory, and then they just get mad.
I think the highest compliment I can pay Eriksen is so many of when you're thinking about the Pochettino era Spurs, Eriksen's involved in so many of those best memories, even if it's just like he's in the middle of a passing sequence or an assist or even a goal. Like, I mean, he's just involved in so much of it. I mean, with so many different players. And he was so fundamental to that team. It's... Like, I think he was the best player. I think he was more important than Harry Kane to making that team work. And, I mean, some of that might be recency bias in terms of Kane's just been kind of off even longer than Eriksen has been. Obviously not on purpose like Eriksen's been. But, you know, it's just... It really sucked watching him be just the shadow of his former self. And I think that's part of why I was so mad, because he was my favorite player to watch on Tottenham. He was so good. And, you know, I on some level, I hope he succeeds at Inter Milan. On another level, I hope he sucks, because maybe that means he wasn't just sandbagging the team for the last few months and he's lost a step. I think the former is more likely than the latter, but I guess we'll see at Inter.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that has paradoxically hurt Eriksen's legacy is we rarely had to go long periods of time without him and see yes. how much the team suffered in his absence. Like, we've made do without Dele for a while, or Harry Kane for a while, or Son for a while, and got through it. And this past 6 months is really the first time we've had a real extended Christian Eriksen absence. And obviously, that's not the reason we're so bad, but I think a peak Christian Eriksen is certainly something we've been missing in this season. And, you know, I think it's just telling that he was just there, you know, just always there. And I think it's easy to overlook a guy that is just, you just never had to miss, you know, you just sort of take it for granted a little bit what he gives you.
Well, especially, I think as the team sort of slowly, until it wasn't slow anymore, fell apart over the last 2 years or so, I think Pochettino used Eriksen to mask a lot of the deficiencies within the squad. And I think at times that sort of got Eriksen away from the things he did really well. And just we were asking him to do some stuff that, you know, maybe like he could do, but it wasn't what he was best at. So, you know, by covering for all these other holes, especially since Dembele sort of fell apart and then left, you know, I think Eriksen, I think that's a reason for some of the drop-off you were talking about, Ben, in terms of, like, you know, free kicks and maybe not free kicks, but in terms of some of the assists and some of the other stuff he did, it wasn't quite what it was at the beginning. And while it was still very good, it became easy to forget just how good he could be.
Yeah, absolutely. He was having to play deeper and patch holes, and, you know, he was no longer scoring those 90th minute outside the box winners.
Like, I mean, until he did it.
Remembered.
Until he did it against Inter or whoever, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, end of an era.
In some ways, I'm glad it's over. It was getting tough to watch, and if you've been around till the end of the year, that might have gotten unpleasant. Like, very unpleasant.
Yeah, I mean, getting a fee for him and, like, letting us sort of move on without him in this tire fire of a season, I think it's definitely helpful both to our budget and to our sort of mental state as fans, is that, you know, we don't have to go in cold next season without him and hope we can figure something out. We have a little bit of a transition period where we can, you know, figure out what this team's going to look like now that his time is done. But yeah, I don't know. I'll be sad and I'll miss him, and I'll definitely be watching to see what he can do with Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez in front of him at Inter, because it seems like he is the exact kind of piece that they've been missing to really, really get going. I hope he takes him to the title.
Yeah, and if he has lost a step, then going to Italy is probably not the worst thing in the world for him.
So, now that Eriksen's gone, we have a new heir to the number 23 shirt.
We do. Clearly that's on purpose, but we've got Steven Bergwijn from PSV Eindhoven. What's wild about this is, I guess there were some tentative links to him about a year ago, but this guy's name hadn't even, I don't think any of us had even heard or interested a Dutch player this time last week. It is very much out of nowhere. I don't know, he seems like a hell of a player. Ben, what does he bring to the squad?
I mean, I'm still just, like, blown away by the transfer before we get into, like, what a player he is. I mean, you know, at first I thought it was, like, one of those, like, Van der Vaart specials where someone was just like, hey, do you want him? And we were like, well, at that price, absolutely. But it seems like PSV didn't really know a whole lot about it. And he just turned up on our doorstep. And they were like, yeah, I guess we're selling him. I don't really know. And I really would love to learn what happened behind the scenes to make that happen, and make that happen so quickly, because he was certainly not being shot by his club.
Well, so there's been a few bits and bobs that have come out if you read between the lines of the reporting, because English reporters can never just, you know, tell us what they've learned. I mean, there's a few things. It seems like Spurs have been working on this guy for at least a year, at least like you know, working with his agent, like, you know, keeping our interests at the front of their forefront of their minds. So it seems like there's been some long-term efforts here, and it also seems like, I don't know what precipitated this in particular, but it seems like he got a new contract last year to keep him a little bit happy, because I think he was getting a little, you know, cranky at the end of last season. He was still there, but I don't know what exactly, because you're right, Ben. It really caught PSV with their pants down to the point where, if I had to guess, I would say a lot of the reporting about him leaving without getting permission was PSV saving face with their fans. And I think they were absolutely prepared to sell him because he clearly had some sort of leverage. But it was very, like, I don't know, it was a lot like Son's transfer, where it just came out of nowhere and it seemed like a fait accompli by the time we heard about it. And, like, obviously there was the drama with the hotel, which, by the way, I don't know if I'm, like, impressed or terrified that Spurs fans were able to figure out what hotel in London he was staying in by the picture of his, like, bedpost that
he
had.
Bed frame?
Yeah. It was very, like...
It's definitely terrifying. Because what are you Googling to figure that out?
Hotel room pictures, I guess?
Like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, that's just... I don't know. That's creepy. Like, I tweeted something about, like, you know, we don't need to don't fuck with cats transfer rumors. Like, that's not... We don't need to go to that level with this stuff. Like, that's terrifying. Like,
yeah, I thought... We're pretty... I thought, like... Flight Tracker Twitter was pretty funny, but now it's getting a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have people, like, using Google Maps to, like, go up and down to, like, players' houses and figure out if they're there, if they're on the plane, or, you know, I don't know. It's just so stupid.
Well, the worst thing about how...
It, by the way, I don't want to make it seem like I don't love it. Like, I, as someone who's an observer, it's amazing.
Yeah, someone's going to do, like, an audio sample of our podcast, figure out where you live. So, exactly what part of Miami you're selling cocaine in that given day of the week.
Yeah, so...
Anyway, I think the only bad thing about this transfer, and let's get that out of the way first, is now I have false hope that maybe Daniel Levy has a DM up his sleeve that we're going to find out about out of nowhere tomorrow or Thursday or Friday or something. But that's probably deeply unlikely. But this has been pretty great. I mean, this guy seems like a pretty good young player to have on your squad. He's 22. Ben, what can you tell us about him?
Yeah, so basics, I mean, he scored 14 goals and 12 assists last year. So far this season, he's got 5 and 10. You know, and I know that listeners expect much more in-depth analysis than mere goals and assists, these pedestrian numbers that don't even count. unfortunately, I don't have anything better than that in terms of numbers, because he plays in the Netherlands, and those are hard to find, and I don't work for StatsBomb. But... yeah, so as a player, he is a dribbly, creative scorer. Like, he kind of does a lot of different things. And I'm not exactly certain what skill set is most likely to translate to the Premier League. You know, he's not super fast, but he's fast. He's not, like, an Adama Traore dribbler, but he's a very good dribbler. You know, he wasn't putting up, like, insane goal-scoring numbers, but again, respectable goal-scoring numbers. And I know this sounds like really downplaying him, but again, he's just 22, and I think he has a lot of different skill sets. And if any one of them really pops based on how we use him, I wouldn't be totally surprised. But I think what we can expect from him is a kind of ball progressing wide guy who, you know, progresses the ball through midfield into the final third and then does something creative with it. He's got pretty good close control. He's maybe, I think, like, what we hoped Lucas would be, I think, is maybe the best way to put it. You know, without the fascism, hopefully, and without
playing... Extremely poor decision-making on every level.
Yeah. Yeah, and being shoehorned into striker for some inexplicable reason.
Well, he's not a goal scorer, I think. I mean, he could, like, that's not why we're bringing him here.
Right. But I think he can chip in shots and goals from wide. And I think, you know, it's still unclear at this point whether we're going to bring in a striker. Rumors have been kind of mixed between a bunch of different targets. And then also, now that we've signed Bergwijn, we don't really need one because it frees up Sonny or Lucas to play striker. And then we still have good attacking wide players in their absence. So, you know, I would still prefer to have Son and Bergwijn play off of a striker, but I think him supporting a guy like Son up top is still pretty good. You know, I'm excited to see him as kind of like a disruptor in the final third. It's not like Eden Hazard where he, you know, dribbles through the box and wreaks havoc like that, but in and around the box, certainly, and like creates enough space for him to get shots and get passes.
Well, that seems to be the thing that I've heard most discussed about him by experts or people who have watched him play in the Netherlands, is like ball progression seems to be the thing that you hear the most frequently, is just he moves the ball in the attacking third, he gets it up there. I mean, I don't know. Like, I know I'm not trying to say he's this type of player, but that sounds like the kind of thing we've been missing since Dembele left. I agree with you, Ben, in that like the important thing he can do is free up Lucas and Son to do other things and not be worrying about sort of moving the ball around or getting it up there, and they can just focus on, you know, attacking. It seems like this is very much a purchase for the future as opposed to this season. Whereas I think, you know, a guy like Gedson is very much about addressing problems right now, and they'll figure out if he's worth keeping around later. I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, he sounds like a hell of a player who we could really use. It's just, I don't think he's going to solve what's ailing us at this moment in time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. In terms of like priority needs, I think we all would have agreed that a defensive midfielder or a fullback or a striker would have been top of the list. But, you know, this team is still a team that's trying to figure out how to move away from, you know, Moussa Dembele in terms of ball progression. We brought in two central midfielders who have played to varying degrees, some through, you know, injury, some through management decisions. And so when you have a player who can do some ball progression on the wing, whether it's with dribbling or with passes into the final third, I think that can be valuable. I don't think we can say that he's just like solely one for the future, and not that is what you were saying, but like I think he can play a role and an important one on this team this season, particularly in light of the fact that, you know, we don't have a Harry Kane. We now have moved on from Christian Eriksen. Like there's certainly a place for Bergwijn to come into this team and play a role, whether that's as, you know, a super sub or whether it's like Ben said, playing alongside Heung-min's Son, and working off of a striker or number nine that's going to come in. But you are right in that, in terms of the future of the club, in terms of squad building, in terms of refreshing what is available to Tottenham Hotspur and Jose Mourinho, this is a great signing. I mean, we've got a 22-year-old, again, a five and a half year contract, and he is an up and coming player, and you know it is similar to the Sun deal in that you're getting a young player who is, you know, well respected throughout the rest of Europe, who's thought highly of, and now he's on your team, he's in your squad, and you're kind of replacing some of the guys who were aging out. I mean, you know, look, if we lose an Eric Lamella over the summer, if we've already lost a Christian Eriksen, you've got this kid already in the squad, ready to play. And already trained and everything in terms of the style and the system that your coach wants to play in. So being able to get him now and at the price we got him at, I mean, 20 million is, or whatever the fee ended up being, about 20 or 30 million. That's nothing now. I mean, you know, Southampton wanted $20 million for Che Adams, who I don't think has scored a Premier League goal yet. so, you know, like, I mean, 20 million pounds or euros or whatever the number ended up being on this guy. I mean, yeah. Why not?
I think it was 30 million euro, which is, yeah, dirt cheap. And I think you're right. Like, it is part of a crucial rebuild that now if you look at our team with our signings over the last few months, you know, Lo Celso and Ndombele, Sessegnon, and now Bergwijn are all under 23. We've got, you know, Winks, Tanganga, Dele, who are all under 23 as well. Like, we suddenly look like that young, hungry team that we had in the early days of Pochettino. And, you know, somehow we blinked and they all became 27. And it was like, ah, oh, fuck, what happened to this, you know, young, exciting squad?
Yeah, and I mean, you can make the argument that we're doing this a few seasons too late, but, like, I don't know, we got to do it, right?
Well, got to do it sooner or later. Might as well do it now. I mean, we can't go unless Daniel Levy has a time machine.
I mean, look, you know, I would have liked to, if this means that we now cannot spend, you know, 20 or 30 million on a striker, which I don't even know if that's if you're getting the same sort of value. Or we can't spend 20 or 30 million on a defensive midfielder. All right, then, like, maybe I don't like this signing as much, you know, in terms of what it means for us financially in the long term. But I think it's probably fine. I mean, given the amount of money we are willing or seemingly willing to spend on, like, a Dybala at the end of the summer, there has to be more money than this sitting around somewhere or available to us if we want. Maybe not sitting around, but you know, like, we have to have money.
I mean, this seems like a bargain. I mean, we talked about how this transfer happened. Like, I mean, all the reporting around this transfer makes it feel very much like something happened that made this fall into Spurs' lap all of a sudden. And I can't imagine we'd be doing this if it was, like, massively fucking up our shit.
You know, it might mean we're not getting a DM anytime soon. But I think if that's the case, it's because Jose has decided that between Lo Celso and Ndombele, he doesn't need one. You know, we've seen Lo Celso now two matches in a row play in central midfield and been just exceptional, doing a lot of good defensive work. I mean, the goal that we scored against Southampton was he won the ball in our half, went on a crazy run, and then dished it to Lamela, who fed Son. You know, between him and Ndombele, they're both incredibly well-rounded. They're press-resistant. They are ball-winning. They are good distributors of the ball. They're creative passers. Like, they're just do-it-all kinds of guys. And if between the two of them they can provide enough ball retention and defensive ability that we just have a functional midfield, like, it's possible that a defensive midfielder isn't necessarily, you know, the kind of make or break role on this team that we've all felt it is, you know, because we got, like, you know, Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko in midfield. Those are guys who you go, okay, they're obviously limited in their skill set, and if you put a destroyer next to them, boy, all right, now we're cooking. But I don't know, like, obviously I think either or both of these guys would be even better with a dedicated destroyer behind them cleaning up, so they don't have to do that, and they can focus on the things that, you know, make our attack better and that are really exciting. But, you know, I think we are not going to find ourselves just getting killed up the gut on counterattacks the way we did with a Winks and Sissoko midfield, you know, even though neither of them are quite a dedicated central midfielder. And I think the fact that we signed a guy like Bergwijn, who is first and foremost a creative attacking player, suggests that our two creative attacking midfielders that could play in that role in Lo Celso and in Ndombele are going to be playing deeper, because otherwise Bergwijn looks a little redundant if you're playing Lo Celso in the attacking band as well. You know, this team, as it was constructed with Harry Kane being out, was really, really short on shots. Like I said, we took 8 shots against Southampton. That's not very good. But if we're deciding that now we can just let Sun and Dele be free to go score goals and take shots in the box, and we're just piling a bunch of creators behind them, you know, I don't know. That's, I think that's both exciting and sort of tips to me a little bit about where we might be looking squad-wise and formation-wise and tactics-wise going forward.
I think the one question that I have about this transfer right now is, how is Jose going to use Bergwijn? And it's one of those things, is because of how this happened, it seemed to be kind of under the radar. And, you know, despite us having been, you know, involved with his agent for a while, it feels like a transfer that Levy did because it seemed like a thing that was smart business. And so I am curious to find out if this is a player that Jose actually wants or thinks that he needs in his squad, and to see if he will be using Bergwijn consistently, or, you know, using him in the starting 11. I mean, we saw that he kind of had, he took a while to warm up to Lo Celso. So I'm interested to see if this is a player that Jose wanted, or if this is a player that Daniel Levy is giving to Jose Mourinho.
I think it's very much the latter.
I think we'll find out quick, because, like, Jensen, again, took none of the time that Lo Celso did, you know, to be vetted and bedded in, and Jose just threw him in the deep end immediately and said,
right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, Jensen seemed was like a Jose-driven thing. He has played and gotten minutes immediately. So we're gonna, we'll find out what
we'll find out in like a week.
Well, yeah, maybe not against City.
We have Southampton again next Wednesday, because we could sure use another Spurs match.
I don't think he can play in the Southampton match.
Oh, because he wasn't registered for the first match. You're right.
Yeah, ugh. I think you have to be registered for the first one to be able to play in the replay. I think. That's I don't. Right. I maybe nope, make that
you're,
up.
You're not. That's correct.
Well, that sucks.
All right, so Leipzig in the Champions League.
It might be a while before we figure out what Jose thinks of him.
I don't know. I can see him coming off the bench against Man City to just shake shit up. I mean, look, we'll probably be down 5-0.
Yeah, when we're already down like 5-0. Yeah,
but I think you can see a difference in the way Spurs are approaching certain targets in this transfer window, and that's why I agree with Brian that there is money to be spent. I mean, I think some people might point at, like, well, why are we fucking around with Piontek? I think clearly there's a difference between people Spurs are looking at in terms of, fuck, we need a striker to, like, get through the rest of the season, or we need a midfielder to replace Sissoko for the rest of the year, versus this is a guy for the future. Because I think they're willing to spend on the latter. I don't think they're willing to spend that much on the former. And I think they wanted Piontek around to, like, okay, rest of the season, it'll work out. And, like, you know, if it turns out he's any good, maybe we'll keep him around. But we don't want to spend a ton of money on this guy. That's how Gedson came in. I mean, I think that is how a lot of these guys are being talked about. I think they're willing to spend on longer-term targets. I think all the guys you see that we're trying to plug the holes in the ship with right now, I think those are the guys we're being cheap on. And frankly, I don't know if that's the worst strategy in the world.
Who are we looking at now?
Well, now that Piontek is going to Hertha Berlin, apparently, it seems like at least the most concrete link we've got is with our old friend Olivier Giroud, who is collecting London teams like their girlfriends. It'd be kind of impressive if he did the London treble with Spurs, Arsenal, and Chelsea. For a guy who played for two of my least favorite teams, I would be kind of excited to see Giroud here.
Yeah, I mean, look, for Giroud having played for Arsenal and for Chelsea, I don't think I have a lot of negative feelings about him. Like, I think he's probably, like, a douche, but he's always been good and
very handsome.
Yeah, and very handsome, which, you know, is very important. He's like Fernando Llorente 2.0. I think he will probably move about as much as Llorente did. And
I mean, look, if all we're looking for Jose Mourinho is a striker who is a true number nine, who is someone that can be the focal point of an attack, who is someone that you can hit long balls to and he will win long balls, knock down possession, spread it to your speedy wingers or your attacking midfielders, I mean, you're not going to get much better than Giroud. I mean, even at, you know, I was going to say his age, but I don't think he's that old. I think he's, what, 32, 33?
He's getting up there for a starter.
Yeah, he's 33.
So, I mean, like, he's not, like, crazy old. Like, I mean, and he spent most of the last, what, like, 18 months basically not playing. I don't know. I think if you brought in Giroud to be the focal point of the attack for the next 6 months, I think you're probably going to win some football games. I think probably a lot more than you would win with Lucas, and probably even more than you would with Piontek. Just because Giroud knows the Premier League, he knows Jose. Well, he's never played under Jose, but like he understands the style of football that Jose wants to play. He's just good. Like, he's experienced.
In theory, he's a better version of Llorente, which is he should be able to play up top in a pinch. He can probably play sustained periods and be useful to our attack. And also, once Harry Kane is healthy, he's probably not going to mind being, you know, Harry's backup. I don't think he's going to, like, you know, kick up a lot of shit over that. And that's valuable to a team like Spurs. And, like, considering how this year's gone, we might have been well served by keeping Llorente around. I don't know. I think Giroud is probably a relatively inexpensive option that could do a job for us for a few months and then be happy to play backup if we need him to in a few months after that. I don't know. Like, Giroud is, I think, part of that really annoying Arsenal photo when they finished fourth or whatever it was, or ahead of us or whatever it was. But, like, other than that, I don't really have a lot of super negative feelings about Giroud, and I think he really fits our needs.
Well, but the thing is, like, there's no way Chelsea sells him to us, right? Like, if you're Chelsea and you're clinging on to fourth place, and you've got a Tottenham team that are, what are we, 6, 9 points back? You're not going to give them a striker that they desperately need to maybe try and catch you up down the stretch.
He's out of contract at the end of the year, though, so it depends. Do they need to try and make any money off of him for financial fair play?
Yeah, but the thing
is
like, they've got other offers for him. Like, AC Milan want him, or no, Inter Milan want him.
But he might want to stay in London, so...
Yeah, but, like, screw him. Like, I mean, you sell him to Crystal Palace then. Like, Chelsea have no obligation to sell him to Spurs or to accept an offer from Spurs. And, you know, it's not like he's a starter or anything. He's not even second choice. He's third choice. So, you know, they can basically tell him, like, look, you're either going to go abroad or you're not going anywhere. Like, I see no reason why Chelsea would sell him to us unless we paid some stupid amount of money and paid over the odds for him, which I don't think is a worthwhile thing. Like, I think if you're going to pay over the odds for somebody, pay over the odds for, like, a Piontek or someone of that ilk, and maybe you get something crazy out of them because they're young and still developing.
Well, I think it depends what that looks like. I mean, would I pay $27 million for Olivier Giroud? Absolutely not. Would I pay, like, $10 million for him? Yeah, maybe. Like, I mean, I might be willing to do with that. And that's good business for Chelsea, considering he's about to leave. I think you're right. I think it is unlikely Chelsea will sell him to us. That said, I would really like it if they would sell him to us.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, most Spurs fans are going to be mad because he played for Arsenal and he played for Chelsea. And honestly, like, if someone's going to, like, hit for the cycle and all the big London teams, like, I'd rather they end at Spurs rather than start at Spurs. Because it's a lot funnier when you have a former Arsenal legend, you know, scoring for you than the other way around. You know, the last time we did this was we got William Gallas from Arsenal after he'd been at Chelsea. And
what a useful time at Spurs.
Yeah, he was a perfectly useful player, and, you know, I bore him no ill will.
And I feel like he was a far more iconic Arsenal player than Giroud was.
Yeah, I don't really know about what Arsenal fan icons look like. But, I mean, Giroud has been a thorn in our side as a striker much more than I think Gallas ever was, just by virtue of, you know, the positions that they play. But, you know, I think Giroud is a guy who, you know, profiles pretty similar to Harry Kane in that, especially the current version of Harry Kane, where not highly mobile, but a very, very good distributor from the front line, very good at bringing other people into play, and just a guy who knows how to get shots. He's not the best finisher. I mean, that's always been like kind of the knock on Giroud, is that he misses easy chances, but he's always been such a high volume shooter that it really doesn't matter. You know, he's a guy who will take shots, and that's something that I feel confident about with him in a way that I don't about Piontek or William Jose or Say Luis or whoever the fuck else we've been linked to, as like a stopgap option. I don't know.
Are you sad that Piontek's going to Berlin?
So,
is that confirmed yet?
It seems like it is going to happen. It is not locked in right now. But as of, we are recording this on Wednesday night in America, it is not official, but it looks like it's pretty official.
No, I think Piontek is not that good to be spending the kind of money that maybe he would have required. You know, you can look back a year ago and see that he scored 30 goals in all competitions and say, you know, oh, this guy's a star. But I think reality is he wasn't even then. Like, there's a reason he ended up at Milan, who are not very good. And he hasn't been good this season at all. Like, I think he'd be a perfectly good replacement for us, but at 24, he would be a guy who, you know, I think would expect more minutes than we're going to be willing to give him when King gets here. And coming off of the slump that he's on, I don't feel super confident that he's the guy to fire us to fourth this season. The thing that I liked about him is that I think he's good enough, and if it proves Harry Kane is cooked, which, you know, I do fear might be the case, it would be nice to know we have a, you know, 24-year-old striker with a lot of upside in the squad who can step into that breach. You know, if Harry Kane comes back next year and he's terrible or just can't move or just isn't fit and his injury woes drag on and, you know, we have to roll with Giroud for a whole nother year as our primary striker, I'm less thrilled about that. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's maybe a problem for another day, and maybe it's worth just hoping and praying that Harry Kane's going to come back to normal.
Well, my concern about Piontek, and this might be not, I mean, this is all supposition on my part, but this guy was, you know, really good at Genoa last year, and then has really not done well on the still pretty big stage at AC Milan. And for a guy like this who, yeah, he's 24, but that's not super old, but if he's going to get his mojo back, a club like Hertha is probably the place to go and do it, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure for a guy like Giroud or Llorente or even Willian Jose. If any of them come in, like, they know they're here to be backups. I mean, you know, two of those guys are at the end of their career. One of them's not a spring chicken. I mean, those guys sort of, they know what they're being brought in here to do. You know, you're Piontek. You don't want to be a backup at this stage in your career. Not unless you're at, like, Real Madrid or something like that. And, you know, I love Spurs, but they're not that. And, you know, that guy's going to be under enormous pressure if we sign him right now to perform over the next, like, what, 4 months or so before Kane gets back to establish himself. And then he's got to, like, learn to live with Harry Kane, who's always going to be first choice and we know doesn't like sharing his ball. So I'm not sure this is the right place for a guy with his profile. You know, you go sign, like, some kid out of the, you know, like another Vincent Janssen or something, someone who's up and coming out of a smaller league. You know, they might take that as an opportunity to really progress, and they might not, you know, mind being behind Kane when he comes back. But a guy like Piontek, I don't know, this doesn't, I'm not convinced this is the right environment for him to succeed. And frankly, replacing or supplementing Harry Kane is going to be incredibly difficult. and you want to make sure you get that right. And I don't know, there's enough question marks around him that I understand the skepticism about spending that kind of money.
Yup.
Okay. So, yeah. But incomings aren't the only guys we've had or discussed. We've had a couple guys leave. We'll wrap this up real quick with them. Kyle Walker-Peters is heading to Southampton. It looks like, although it's not official yet as of the recording of this podcast, Danny Rose is heading to Newcastle. Troy Parrott is being discussed for loans at QPR. Of all these, I think Rose, I mean, I think we all just hope Kyle Walker-Peters gets the seasoning he needs at Southampton. There's no obligatory purchase in that deal, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up leaving if he has a good but not great time at Southampton. I think what's worth talking about here, although it's nice to know he won't be eligible, or will he be eligible to score the game winner against us when we play them again? Because technically, he was registered for the FA Cup when we played him the first time.
Yeah, technically. I don't think that counts, though.
Yeah, well, at least he won't embarrass us in that game. But I guess, you know, we gave our sort of departures to Christian Eriksen at the beginning of this podcast, but or earlier in this podcast, rather. I guess Danny Rose looks like he's on his way out. It's only a loan. There's no obligation to buy. But, yeah, Danny Rose is a guy who has been a really important player at Spurs for a very long time, and it looks like he's on his way out. And I know he's a favorite of all of us on this podcast, if not most Spurs fans. I mean, Brian, how are you feeling now that, I mean, we'll probably have a longer conversation about this when he actually leaves, but it looks like Danny Rose is on his way out of Tottenham.
I don't know. I kind of been preparing myself for this since like 2017. I mean, he picked up that knee injury and he never really was quite the same after that. And, you know, I mean, he played an important role in the run in the Champions League last year, but it was the 2017 knee injury. And then that summer was the interview to The Sun about Googling players. And it just kind of feels like every summer since that knee injury, he's kind of been on the chopping block, or there's been rumors and links that he was going away. So, you know, more so than Eriksen, I think I've kind of been prepared for this. And you know, you throw in the fact that he's just not in the team. Whether he's healthy or hurt is up for discussion, I guess. But like, I don't know. I mean, it really sucks because he's been around at Spurs for forever. You know, he scored the incredible goal in his Premier League debut against Arsenal, and he was so important to the way, you know, that first team that was really good under Pochettino played with him and Walker as the fullbacks, and like it'll be weird to see him wearing another team's uniform, but I'm not that broken up about him going now. He was a left back that whose game was predicated on athleticism, and his athleticism and explosiveness just wasn't the same as it used to be, and so I'm not like super upset about him moving on.
I'm sad just because I love Danny, but yeah, like Brian said, his time's been up at Spurs for a while now. And
but he was, you know, great for part of last year. I mean, we don't make the Champions League final.
He's managed to have little mini renaissances where you're like, oh, is Danny Rose back? Is he not quite finished? And then, sure enough, shortly thereafter, he looks totally washed again. And, you know, maybe he's got some life left in those legs, and maybe at a team like Newcastle that expects a lot less out of him, and he'll get to play as a wing back, which asks a lot less of his legs. You know, I'm sure that they might get some good use out of him. But, you know, he's our longest-serving player at this point. I mean, you know, we have, like, Harry Kane and youth players who, yeah, I guess probably technically been here longer, but you know, he was here under Redknapp. He was here under AVB and Sherwood and Pochettino. You know, like, he is just, you know, that last connection to an earlier day of Tottenham Hotspur. And with him gone, our longest continually serving players will be Vertonghen and Hugo Lloris.
Not for long.
And, yeah, you know, it's just like, it's always sad to see, like, kind of the end of an era. And Danny Rose, you know, represents a final end to AVB and Redknapp's time here, which isn't the worst thing, but it's still a little nostalgic. And, you know, it's just tough being at that part in a squad refresh cycle where the guys that you've loved over the last few years and have given you so many great moments just aren't going to be part of the team anymore.
Well, and that's what sort of stinks with in regards to Eriksson and in regards to Rose, because I think I feel similarly about both of them. They were such good players, and they were such my favorites. I mean, they were so good, and it was never going to be fun to watch them sort of like transition out of the team, but to watch it happen in a way with both of them, it's been kind of ugly and unpleasant, because you just, you know, I mean, these are players I want to have very fond memories of, and I want to sort of, you know, I want to see come back and be well regarded and well remembered in the years to come. And it's just, you know, I'm sad to see him go, but given how ugly the last 2 years have been with him, I'm just ready for it to end. I'm ready for it to stop being drama. I'm ready for him to stop feuding with managers and giving exclusive interviews to the Sun, where I know we all kind of love Danny because he just says shit. But it's also like, I mean, this latest round of comments to the press just seems like sour grapes from him. And it's, I don't know. I'm just ready to not feel like Danny Rose is torpedoing the squad or just one of our weak links. I'm ready to move on.
And I mean, it sucks because, like, I guess because Spurs didn't do this squad refresh over time, all this stuff is kind of happening all at once. And it's weird because you realize that no one really gets to ride off into the sunset. Like, you don't get, like, in football, you just do not get, you know, a Tom Brady playing out the string, or Eli Manning is probably a better example. Eli Manning.
I don't think that ended well either, bro.
No, it didn't end great, but I mean, like, he stayed in New York Giant and then he retired, and, like, you know, you just don't the number of Francesco Totti's in football, there's just not that. You don't get the guy that retires from his boyhood club and is still, you know, a valuable part of the squad and has, you know, the fans and the media haven't turned on him, and you just don't get that anymore. And
right, that timing is really tough, right? Like, either they're leaving on their terms and it's a big toxic nightmare fight, or they're leaving on our terms, and usually that's because they suck and they're hurting the squad, and you lose your fond memories of them because they're dragging the team down. Like, where's that sweet spot?
Well, you need them to hit either, one of two things needs to happen. They need to be aging gracefully and realize it, where they understand that, like, oh, God, I don't have it anymore, and I have been kind of mediocre for a hot minute, and I just want to get out of here before it gets worse. Or you need them to so clearly deserve to go to a mega club that it's sort of like, you know what, Real Madrid's willing to pay a fuckload of money for this guy. Like, he's so much better than we are. Who am I to say no? The problem is, unlike, you know, a couple, like, 20, like when Gareth Bale and Luka Modric left, where I think deep in our hearts we all know they'd kind of outgrown us, you know, what outgrowing Tottenham looks like is a lot different than it used to be. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of teams that are just upward, they're clearly better positioned in the pyramid of world football, at least until now. Maybe that's going to change again.
Remember, even then, that sucked. Like,
it did, but at least there was a certain level of, like, you know, it was sad to see Luka Modric go, but no one was mad about Luka Modric going to Real Madrid, you know?
Well, I think only because we stayed Chelsea's hand the summer before, when he could have gone there, and so we were like, wow, this is I guess better. But yeah, I mean, like, I think, like, looking back at my time here as a fan, you know, guys like Nasser Chadli, who were able to, like, fill a role until they weren't good enough, and then we moved them on, and, you know, it was fine. You know, there was no hard feelings. He didn't overstay his welcome too much. You know, like Steve Malbronk, guys like that, who were just like marginal players who were just allowed to leave when their time ends. You know, I think those are the only guys who really give you that, like,
The guys who can be easily sidelined. The guys who can just be easily sidelined by a manager. Those are the guys who usually...
Right. Like guys like Ledley King who give everything they can until the last possible moment, and then they're like, you know what? It's just not worth it to keep going. I'm going to hang up my boots. And, like, you know, he still had miles left in those legs. He probably could have done a job a little bit over the course of the next season, but, you know, he recognized his limitations and was like, let's just end on a good note.
But I think that's part of what's made...
That's so rare.
That's part of what's made Rose's decline so ugly is there's a level of, you know, there's been a certain level of, like, lashing out, and, you know, clearly there was some discontent with Pochettino in the squad, but, you know, it's so hard to tell, like, because he seems to be blaming at least some of what's happened over the last few years on how he's been handled, but, I mean, clearly he's just physically not what he was, which is a shame because there was about a year, maybe 2 years, where he was the best left back in England. In the Premier League, certainly. And it's just... man, it's just like... You just wish it could have ended a little more gracefully for him. Because he deserves
it. But like, what's the alternative, right? It's like, we had him and Kyle Walker. They're the best fullbacks in England. They were both heavily rumored to be going to Man U and Man City, respectively. Walker left. Obviously, that didn't go well with Spurs fans. You know, like... Had Rhodes left then, I don't think it would be any fonder of a departure.
No, you're right. I would have liked to have had the £50 million or whatever, but right. Now you almost just want it. It's just like Ericsson. You just want it to be over with so you can move past all the ugly shit and just, like, remember the good stuff. I think the thing that's crazy when you think back on Rhodes is, I mean, God, how long ago was... I mean, it was 10 years ago, was the on his Premier League debut, that goal, which is incredible. And I think, Ben, I don't know if you thought this, but it seems like that's the kind of thing that a player would do. And I mean, I remember in the commentary, Andy Gray is like, he says, like, he'll never do anything as good as that again in the Premier League. And that's probably the highlight of his career. But at the same time, I mean, that guy was a really good player for Tottenham for a very long time, which you wouldn't have guessed by how he played left back then.
Right. And he just, lived up to that moment.
Huh?
I think his career lived up to that moment.
I don't know if he ever had a moment that good again, but I think you're right. The career did live up to that moment. And it's...
Like, it doesn't feel like David Bentley's goal against Arsenal, where you're like, oh, remember that crazy thing that happened that one time? It's like...
No, I think it's actually... I think it's actually a tribute to his career that almost feels like it was a different player, because that feels so far removed from the solid, great left-back we had on our squad for, like, you know, 6 or 7 years there. And it's just, I don't know. I hope he goes to Newcastle. I hope he's happy. I hope he comes back and gets applauded one day. It's just, again,
the next
guy
is going to leave gracefully. My money's on Lamella.
Lamella will absolutely leave gracefully. He is, yes. No player loves Tottenham Hotspur more than Eric Lamella.
Not even Harry.
No, I guarantee you, not even Harry. He's so great. It's just outstanding. He will never hurt us like this. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up.
Yeah. We play somber ending.
Yeah, well, we play City this weekend, so it could get a lot more somber. But I think
we want to talk about that at all. Or
I mean, I think we're gonna. I think it's gonna be real ugly. I mean, what do you guys think?
I mean, they've shat the bed enough. Like, they lost to Man U today. I mean, they had a 3-1 lead in the cup, so a 1-0 loss doesn't mean anything, but they didn't lose in the 90 minutes. You know, they are vulnerable. They've had fuck-ups this season. That's why they're, you know, not actually competing for the title this season when, you know, they should be.
So, yeah, I just think Pep's going to bring his A-game to make Jose's day kind of miserable.
I mean, look, Jose is typically good at playing these sort of tactical battles and in tough games against good teams. You know, we played Liverpool very closely under Jose a few weeks ago. You know, it's not impossible that we get something out of this. I'm not expecting anything, but, you know, we could lose gracefully.
Well, the nice thing about it is, I think, considering how Chelsea's playing lately, you know, if we win this game, I think that might change the complexion of that race.
Yeah, I mean, we have Villa after this, and then Chelsea. And Chelsea, I think, have a tough schedule themselves. So it's entirely conceivable that when we meet Chelsea, that could be a fourth place game.
Brian, do you have any City thoughts?
I mean, I think we're going to lose. And then, you know, it'll be real annoying. And then we'll lose to Southampton. And then we'll lose to Chelsea. And then we'll lose to Salzburg. And we might never win again.
Jesus. So much for transfer window optimism.
Oh, right. The other Red Bull. I'm sorry. The other Red Bull. Red Bull Leipzig.
We're playing New York Red Bulls.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Ben's right. Like, City can be got at. And, you know, Jose can plan for these games. I just think the problem is that I think Jose's record against Pep is not great. So, like, I'm not supremely confident going into this game, especially given kind of our performances so far this calendar year. I think, well, we've got two league goals all year. So, I don't know.
All right, well, I'm predicting a win.
No, I don't think anyone is. But here we go. So, Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, predicting a win against Man City so I can gloat about it later. Okay. Or quietly delete it if we don't.
Naturally. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That's Brian with a Y.
And you can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.